presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and a big thank you to Dr. Ducharme from Cornell and from the Cornell Ruffian Equine Center across from Belmont for just, you know, basically responding to every on the cuff. You listen to them talk about those issues, and it prompts a lot of. You know, a lot of questions, and it's so important to a horse's performance. Andy Serling standing by from the New York Racing Association. And Andy, good morning.
Morning. I'm not going to respond to any questions. I figured I should balance out your last guess.
That's a great idea.
So I'm going to be my usual obstinate self.
I'm not going to quiz you about, you know, the equine athlete, really, other than how much they paid.
We love the equine athletes. Please quiz me about them.
Absolutely. And, of course, that's what we're going to do. And, got the first full week, obviously, of racing in the books. And, not necessarily performance when it came to, you know, the big feature on Saturday. You know, I said, Andy, on Monday, that's the frustration when you have a small field in a race like the Vanderbilt. You know, you it's a nice performance, but it doesn't. What does it really teach us?
I mean, I think it's been established to some degree that Volatile is a serious talent. I don't think that's really in question. I'm never a fan of overhyping horses. And I feel like there was a lot of overhyping being done. Now, granted, his performance in the Aristides was brilliant. And, you know, I've certainly, you know, declared last year, we thought that, what's his name, Chancelot, whose performance was even more eye-opening when he won the Amsterdam Aristides, and he turned out to be good, but a bit of a disappointment. And, of course, he was always a little bit questionable because of the connections. But, you know, you never want to annoy the horse off one giant performance. But obviously his Aristides was the kind of performance that could, you know, sort of portend some real greatness. As you say, you know, he had the situation to start where the only other horse with speed ended up getting scratched the gate. I don't know if the race would have run that significantly differently, but obviously when you have a 6-furlong sprinter that's able to go the last quarter faster than any of his previous quarters, then you've got a talented horse, it's sort of a joke what's going to happen, right? And that's kind of what happened here. I don't think it was a performance that will define him other than we knew he was a good horse, but what happens when he faces another talented speed type, you know, and they'll say, well, he can stalk. Okay, fine. But he will have to stalk at a much more contentious pace at some point against some better horses. And we'll see what he does in those situations. And maybe, you know, in that situation, it'll be an opportunity for him to show his true brilliance. And he certainly showed in the RCs that there is the possibility of brilliance. But other than that, he's a very nice horse. But he's not, you know, the be-all and end-all. He's not, you know, in the class of the great sprinters we've seen. And that's why I know because Steve Asmussen trains him, there were some inevitable comparisons to Mattioli. And I got kind of annoyed when that happened on the show during the week. Or I think maybe it was on Talking Horses when it was suggested. It's like, no, Mattioli won, you know, all of these hugely important races in America last year, I think it was Talking Horses, and ran some huge races in doing so, and he did it over and over again and proved it in a true Horse of the Year type campaign last year. And the suggestion that he hadn't tipped his hand the year before when he ran that big race in the Chick Line before he got hurt. So I hate to see him compare just because they have the same trainer. He has done nothing to compare himself to Mattioli at this point. What he said is, is a really talented horse, and we'll see what he does in a more contentious environment. He beat some good horses, especially in Whitmore, Mind Control as well, and even Frenzy Fire. But he did it under such optimal circumstance that you have to be careful in going overboard one way or another. On the other hand, because of the way the race was run, and essentially a manner of a turf race, he could never earn a particularly high speed figure. So using a final time speed figure is also a dubious way to evaluate his performance. So all in all, he did what he had to do, but he didn't prove anything, and he was in a situation where he almost couldn't prove anything.
And that's, you know, that's what's frustrating. It's nice to get these performers and see them. And I guess it's why, Andy, that these, you know, the Breeders' Cup has become the kind of monolith that it has, because it ends up being, you know, not that it's the only forum for the assembly of top talent.
No, between the Bosberg and the Phoenix and
right.
Skipping races, and maybe at Santa Anita, is there a race out there? Yeah, it used to be called the Ancient Title. I'll still call it the Ancient Title. And, you know, between them, they'll all split up, right, and generally speaking. I agree. We'll see. I mean, we'll see how the things, you know. I thought that what's his name? I'm sorry. I'm being disrespectful. McKenzie is running in the sprint at 6 furlongs at Delta this weekend.
Yeah.
So is Bob thinking that maybe he's late looking to make a run at the Breeders' Cup sprint? That would be interesting.
I wonder. It seems like it. Yeah, I don't think that he's never gone 6 furlongs. I mean, I think he's 7.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting.
I saw him the entries. I'd be fascinated to see what he does. You know, obviously, he's not the worst he was last year, but I think he's still talented. It'll be interesting to see what he can do. So, you know, it's a long year. There's some good horses out there. I'm looking forward to the Alan Jerkins this weekend. And listen, there's no reason that. Ultimately, Volador won't be the best sprinter in the country. And I don't think his race this weekend said he wouldn't be. It just didn't answer any questions because of the whole setup. Listen, I'm not sure his stablemate that won here in his second start a week before, what's Yalpon?
Yeah.
Geez, that horse was super impressive. He's not quite, obviously, he hasn't done what this horse done, but he's only run twice. So it's not like Steve Aston doesn't have another good sprinter in his barn.
No, I forgot. Actually, I forgot about.
I think he got a 101 buyer, 100
yeah.
or 101.
Yeah.
I mean, he was strong in the stretch, that horse.
That's right.
So
that's right.
You know, I guess it's a good year to be Steve Aspenson. He's got some nice horses in the barn, that's for sure.
Well, and you know, he was on yesterday. We spent as much time talking about his son, Keith, winning his first race as a jockey, actually, as anything, which was really.
That's cool.
You know, just to appreciate, under these circumstances, by the way, and I asked him to confirm this, he has flown back and forth from Louisville and from New York for every single start that Keith has, for every ride that Keith has had these last 3 months.
I'm not going to comment on that.
That's
anyway,
nice. Yeah.
What else?
Well, you know, talk a little bit about the circumstances around some of the other, you know, stakes where, you know, some like it Hot Brown. What can you say about Maker with these horses? Every weekend, it seems, he's winning stakes with, you know, with these turf runners. And yeah. I was at the UN the week before. Starship Jubilee.
Were you speaking to the assembly?
No, I was.
we could use somebody to represent this country.
Yeah, it's true. But no, I was on the track apron actually for the UN, as opposed to on the east side,
on the lower east side, on the east side, midtown of the city.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll give you one quick UN aside. I don't think I've ever told you this. My dad you'll love this. My dad takes me to the UN, and you must have gone on one of those tours as a student, right?
Not that I remember.
So you're in a group tour.
We go to the Hayden Planetarium.
Oh, that's also outstanding. We're on the UN tour, and Harlan Sanders, Colonel Sanders himself, was on the tour with us.
Wow. That pretty much shaped your life for you, didn't it?
It was the cool, the whole white suit, the black tie, the whole thing. It was him. It was not one of these people dressed up in like the commercials now with the series of different Colonel Sanders. It was really him. And he gave me a little, like a little picture. If you went to ask for an autograph or to meet him, he had a little tiny picture that he would give you that he'd autograph.
Doesn't carry around those little things of mashed potatoes with the gravy.
cats, those little styrofoam cups of...
Hopefully they're not still using styrofoam.
That's great. The childhood memory, right? A little pool of gravy around the edges. Talk about Sister Charlie and Starship Jubilee. And we talked to Kevin Attard yesterday, his first graded stake win in New York as a horseman.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people spent too much time lamenting Sister Charlie not winning. Obviously, she's been really terrific over the last couple of years. But I think Starship Jubilee was a big story going into the race as well. And as I said on Twitter on a number of occasions, and even on the show, I mean, there's an argument to be made that she's kind of the coolest horse in racing, right? And that she's a story that should be told a lot more. The claim for $16,000 from the trainer whose name we won't speak, and she was running in turf sprints in February of 2017, the total mediocrity, and since the claim, she's now run 27 times, with 16 wins, 8 of them graded, and 4 seconds and 3 thirds. So she's 23 to 27 in the money with the majority of almost, you know, over 60% of them wins. Well over $1 million, and, you know, and her value as a broodmare is probably well over $1 million as well. So it's like a story that just, like, anyone could have claimed this horse in theory, you know. I don't know if anyone could have done the job that they've done with her, but... I think it's just a great, great story, and, you know, it was really cool, I thought, to see her win. I love this horse. I just think she's so much of what's good about racing. And as far as Sister Charlie, you know, she's a six-year-old, and I think the story there is, this is why Peter Brandt getting back in the game is so good for racing, right?
Yeah, yep.
The fact that he took a shot, he's been around the game a long time, he knows that he knew and he knows, but there was a real chance she would come back and not be as good as she was, and she sort of tipped her hand her last two starts. Her win in the Flower Bowl was hardly as impressive as a race like her Diana last year, which was brilliant, and her Breeders' Cup was just sort of average. And, you know, I mean, I still obviously have very high-level performances, but they're not the kind of performances you would go to expect from her. So there was every chance she would come back and not be as good. Now, you know, in talking to Chad Brown about her, I think he feels that he can, you know, get her ready, and she will be effective in Diana, and I hope she is. But she's going to have to prove it, because after that race, there have to be questions of whether or not she can be as competitive as she was in the past. So it's great that he brought her back. It's always a good thing for racing when champions come back, and I'd like to see them be rewarded for it. Having said that, she didn't run a race, and it's not as though the race didn't have a good story coming out of it just because she lost. Doesn't mean that Starship Jubilee wasn't a terrific story, and a story that's good to tell.
No, agreed. And you know, she too is a horse that very, you know, very much was intended for the shed, and there was real question whether she
right. She's as good as ever.
Yeah, it's
different horses are different. Some horses just keep rolling along. Some of them don't. You know. Listen, yeah. We've seen horses. We saw Rachel Alexander after a three-year-old season. She was never nearly as good as she was. I mean, I think her loss in the first Lenson was a tremendous race. It's yet another misunderstanding of race dynamics and, you know, sort of people who just wanted to knock her for whatever silly reasons. She ran remarkably well. When you consider that life at 10 was basically ease and came back to win the Beldame, and she's the one who dueled with her, and she lost right late stages trying to get a mile and a quarter. That was a remarkably brave race by her. But regardless, you know, some of these horses just don't, they don't, you know, especially with the fillies or mares, they just don't come back as well.
Yeah, we will look forward to the Diana, and Kevin Attard said that he's expecting to be back with her for that.
That's awesome. Great.
Andy. On Sunday, we'll talk about the Bernard Baruch in a minute, but a nice win for Some Like It Hot Brown, who actually has gotten better with maturity and with, you know, I don't know, a number of things. But I'm more interested immediately for your impressions of Happy Saver, because that this feels like yet another one of these, you know, 2-for-2, 3-for-3 horses that are suddenly everywhere that really is going someplace.
Yeah, I think, you know, it appeared he wasn't really running on the turn when he was inside. And we only ran 3 races in the dirt on Sunday, and I think there's a very strong argument based on those races that the rail was dead. And that's when it had not been the case at all during the meet, that the rail had been good for most of the meet. And it may have been an advantage in a couple of days. And he was totally spinning his wheels, and it looked like the horse, Beau Luminaire, just taking the race over. And when Irad, it was Irad rode him, right? Happy Favorite?
Yes.
When he
yes.
got him the outside, I mean, he just flew past that horse. And I agree. He got a 95 buyer, and, you know, which is, you know, for a second time starter going a mile at 8. That's a lot. And so, you know, yeah, you had to be impressed by his debut. I mean, the track may have sped up, but he still ran as fast a race as No Parole did in his debut. The track was faster. And so I think it, you know, and obviously, I mean, they figure maker would have felt that way. But, you know, he stretched out and improved even a little bit off his debut. So, yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, I have to imagine that Todd is looking at the Jim Dandy with him and maybe even the horse that ran second, Money Moves, on Saturday. But I agree, and you know, these are horses that I imagine if things go well in a race like that, every reason to believe they would be pointed to the Preakness. And I think we'll see this year, the Preakness has the potential to be as tough as any race, you know, any Preakness we've seen in a long, long time, with new shooters. You know, hopefully things, you know, work out and they continue to stay on the racetrack. I can't imagine the Pennsylvania Derby is being run this year, right?
It wouldn't appear so. Yeah.
Not sure it's up with the purse money, but regardless, it would be unfortunate if that happened. But that's not some of my business, exactly. But, I think that, you know, it's all setting up for what we talked about before, you know, they changed the sequence of races because of the situation, the way it played out. As we said at the start, and you and I were in agreement that this would be a tougher Triple Crown for a variety of reasons, but one of them being that new shooters that emerge during the summer have a chance to contest, if not the Derby, certainly the Preakness. So, yeah, I mean, you have Art Collector, who presumably will be in the Derby, and, you know, he's a horse that wouldn't have made the Triple Crown this year, and
right.
The Uncle Chuck, depending on how well he does in the Travers for the Derby and or Preakness, and, you know, obviously now this horse, and perhaps some others out there also. I mean, you know, you saw the Country Grammar and Carrick era. What's his name? The horse who was second to Country Grammar.
Caro.
Yeah. Okay. That horse ran extremely well, and I guess they're pointing towards the Travers with him as well. So, yeah, I like it. You know, I like the idea that there are going to be new horses emerging. Because listen, we lost some big names this year, with Nadal and Charlatan and Maxfield. And that was kind of a punch in the gut in a very short period of time.
Couple of other performances and performers overall in terms of some outfits, too. We had Jimmy Bond on TV the other morning, Seth and I did, and I thought that his horses were running well, and then, boom, all of a sudden, 3 wins in 3 days for Jimmy Bond, including that Serratalto. When he's right, he's a nice horse.
Yeah, I agree. First start in a while. Ran well in there to get it done. It was nice. Who do you win with besides him in that prioritized?
Those two. Well, your man, your friend, you heralded the win, Manny Petty, for the Zevo's first winner for Tom Coleman.
That was nice, yeah.
Right?
Now, it's funny with prioritize. You know, I think it may have been Anthony said on the show that, like, you wouldn't want to make fun of Jimmy or something, but, you know, he obviously made a mistake not running this horse in the dirt from the get-go, and I said, I don't think Jimmy would have any problem saying, I wish I had put this horse on the dirt from day one. So, you know, I don't think trainers, and certainly a guy like Jimmy Bond, is afraid to admit he probably made a mistake and ran him a lot of times in the turns. Not that he ran it badly, but he wasn't much that good, but he's much down in the dirt, and I'm sure Jimmy rues the fact that he didn't run on the dirt much earlier because he's turned into a nice horse. He got a very good ride by Eric Hansel, by the way, in that race.
Yes. Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Very good.
We had had Linda Rice on yesterday as well, Andy, and Paul Pompa winning a graded stake every week at Saratoga so far?
They won a graded stake together, she and Paul.
Yeah, turned aside, the quick call winner.
Yeah, it's graded now, right. Is this the first year it was graded? I don't know. Can't remember. I've always liked that horse. Yeah, that's right. And Paul won with Country Grammar as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I like Turn Aside. I think he's good. He was very good in that race. Obviously, Jack and Noah didn't show up, but he wasn't beating that horse.
No, it's a big win. A big win for him.
He's a nice horse. I like that horse. I think he's a very nice horse. I think Lindo will do really well with that horse going forward.
Just looking perhaps through
one
some
of the best turf sprinters she's ever had.
Yeah. Just kind of poking through. How about the nice win of French Reef, the maiden winner, going short on the grass?
Oh, that second time starter, the Chad Brown.
Yes.
Narrow and company owned. That was scary, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, that horse, he was like in a different race than everybody. My gosh. I mean, he got a 91 buyer. It's like, he might have won the quick call. I think he's a four-year-old, actually. But, Jesus, I mean, he spread that field out. And they were moving. I mean, that was not a slow pace. They were moving. And he just ran fast the whole way. I mean, you know, I don't know if he's a tough horse to get on the racetrack. He's only making his second start of his career. And so I don't know. He may be one of those horses that I don't know if we'll see him. But, geez. I remember when he made his debut. It was late in the year at Aqueduct. And I think he was going a mile or a mile 16. Probably about a mile. And Chad said he really wanted to run him in a sprint, but asked him about him. He said, you know, and he said, I just don't think if he can get the distance to his favor, and he stopped late in the race. And, Jesus, that was some performance.
Yeah.
I bet. I didn't know why he was such a heavy favorite.
They knew.
Well, I guess. I think he surprised a lot of people, that horse. You know, I think he really did. He was good.
There's a couple of other efforts that need to be noted too, because one came right after French Reef that nobody, you know, everybody's marveling at Maker with those turf horses. That Admiral Lynch that beat Honest Mischief got a 103 buyer.
Well, first of all, beating Honest Mischief is not exactly a crowning career achievement. There's a list of horses that have done that. You know, I was missing one of those horses because he ran that very fast race in the second start. And he had a big pedigree with Judmont and Chad. You know, he got some hype. He just hasn't lived up to it. He ran well in the Woody Stevens with a trip, but he hasn't run a particularly good race after that. I mean, he's a good horse, but he's not a really good horse. But the winner of that race, that Admiral Lynch, he got a 103 buyer. He ran. Jeez. He sort of sat up that pace setter. He broke well, and he just sat in the pace setter like the horse wasn't even in the race. The horse that and won the Grade Stakes was running for a tag with Peter Miller. Jesus, yeah, he was impressive. I agree. No, we've seen some very good performances so far this meet.
And I'll fold in one more before we talk about this week. And, of course, we got things like the Bowling Green and the Alan Jerkins and Personal Ensa, et cetera. And Whitney got a big day coming Saturday. But I do want to mention one other. Todd Pletcher went to the pedigree play, and Colonel Liam's effort, which I think would have been Wednesday of last week, moving the second dam, Wonder Again, and
Wonder Again is a lousy producer.
Yes.
The opposite of the broodmare that she was in the racetrack. A great racehorse was a lousy producer. And that's a horse they paid, I think, a lot of money for. And he had gotten placed first in his debut or his second start. He had never finished first. But he exploded in that race. Yeah. No, I agree. He ran well, too. I don't know what kind of numbers he got, but I agree. Very good.
99.
Yeah, no, he looked great. I agree. He looked good. You're right. That's another... You're right, it was forgotten early in the week, but you're absolutely right. No, he really ran. Jeez, he ran. Yep. No, you're right. It's good. The turf divisions could use some new blood. I mean, somebody like Hot Brown did run well, but I mean, there were some disappointments in the group. I mean, good governance. Probably ran badly, but he didn't really run that well. Obviously, Holiday showed that, A, he needs to lead, and, you know, it's been a race in Florida. But he won those races in Florida under ideal circumstances. He obviously ran well in doing it. They were happy to concede the lead. It's interesting. They were so much more aggressive in Florida. I think there's a misunderstanding that the turf was somehow hurting speed so far at the meet. I had heard that notion from a number of people, and I didn't agree with it at all. First of all, I think when turf works are fair, heat is not a big disadvantage, but certainly no advantage. You know, we're so used to dirt in general sort of helping speed in ways that turf won't. So I didn't think it was the turf as much as just this. It's not like there were a whole slew of horses with speed that were utterly collapsing that you would have thought would have won. Some faint-hearted speeds that I may have liked that were bad picks, but, you know, I didn't feel like, I thought I'd heard a lot of that chatter, and it's an argument I never agreed with, and I continue to not agree with it. I think turf racing, and when the turf horses are playing fair, it's not going to lend itself to speed that much. Unless they're just the best horses, in which case, you know, something like a Hot Brown was, and I wonder if, you know, they were, I don't know what went into it. I mean, listen, there was obvious intention from Mike Maker and Tyler Gaplione to go with something like a Hot Brown, and they made no intention of going, but there was, I think the race two back for Holiday, Luis Saez said, I don't care who's going in this race, I'm going. And you didn't see those same tactics in this race. Now, whether or not he would have won if he did that, I don't know. But clearly, I think it's clear that if Holiday is going to be good going forward, he has to be in front. So you would think the next time they run him, they would be more aggressive with him. But, you know, it's hard. I mean, it's hard. If you have a horse that's sort of one-way speed, it's kind of like the Serengeti Empress argument, right? Sometimes you're going to have to use them hard to get the lead, and that right. may be their detriment. But if you don't get the lead, they can't win.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. It's a catch-22.
Yeah. And, I mean, there were other words. I mean, gee, Seismic Wave would run so well in the poker. I mean, he ran too badly to be true. He never got in the race. So he's a better horse than that, you know, whether or not, you know, Mott looks back on it and says, I came back too soon. No, I don't. That's a dubious excuse, not the kind of excuse I think Bill would use, because he's come back quickly with other horses with a lot of success in his career, you know? So it's just, he just didn't show up for whatever reason.
A very good week of racing, and things catching momentum. And in fact, for those that haven't looked ahead to tomorrow, I mean, we got a great Saturday coming up, but...
tomorrow's terrific, I agree.
Really good.
I don't have it with me. It's in my apartment at my mom's house, so... But no, I agree. I've finished up all the cards Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week, and there's plenty of opportunities. And Saturday should be a great day. We're drawing the Whitney at 11 o'clock for people who are interested. Tomorrow I'll be hosting it. It's a closed event, but I will be streaming on YouTube. So, you know, check the Naira webpage. Follow Naira and Naira Betts on Twitter. Follow Naira Betts on Twitter. I urge everybody to follow them. A lot of good stuff there. But, yeah. You know, figure it out, but I think we're streaming it live on YouTube at 11.
Excellent. We'll pick up the audio.
I tell you, the MC is going to be really awful.
Regarding, before we talk about who to expect for the weekend.
I thought I was leaving. What are we talking about?
Well, you started a couple minutes late, so I get to carry you another minute or two.
I'm 2 seconds to 30 minutes, but go ahead.
You've got tomorrow. The feature is one of those classic Saratoga features, and it's $150,000 optional claimer, a purse of $80,000 with Deva Money and Breaking the Rules, Just Howard, Jidou, Therapist, Wissahickon. Unbelievable.
Well,
made you look.
The feature is actually the day at the spa, which is being run earlier.
Oh, that's true. It's a
but
little
ignoring
early.
Ignoring that.
Yes. Well.
Yeah, that is a very strong race. That race you mentioned is a strong race.
Really entertaining.
I like the European on the rail. You're not the Thomas horse, the Augustine Stable horse.
Yes, Wissahickon.
Yeah. I think if he runs, he may lay a hurt on that field.
Out of a Nureyev mare, no less.
I saw Nureyev. I saw him at Gainesway back in around 1996, I want to say. I also saw Risen Star. I think it was Gainesway, right? I saw Risen Star there. Also, the only time I saw Risen Star and then seeing him race in the Belmont. It was giant. And Nureyev had his own paddock. You know, he had his own stable there. Huge thing. They had all the pictures up from how they got him to be recovered from his injury. It's fascinating, actually. I'm sure they're still there. So they still use the stall. It was a big, huge stable just for him. Huge building. It was great.
You know, when you first said that you saw Nureyev, I thought you were going to talk.
I've seen Baryshnikov around the city.
So did I. I saw him dance.
Oh, did you? I never went when he played the National New York City Ballet. I saw him years ago. I remember seeing him at, there's a play that Robert De Niro did back in the 80s called Cuba and His Teddy Bear. It was De Niro, Burt Young, and Ralph Macchio, Karate Kid. And I saw that at the Public at a tiny theater, and I remember he was there.
I saw it I was in high school, and they took us to New York to see him. And you know, I've got to ask my father, because I may have actually seen Nureyev in the 60s as a child, and I've got a vague recollection. And I'm gonna ask.
Were you wearing bell bottoms?
No, he was wearing a leotard.
I said, and, were you wearing bell bottoms?
No, I doubt it. I doubt it.
You have a lot of bell bottoms.
No, that I. You know what? There is one picture of me that. That may actually, yeah, I may have some wide whale
Paisley shirt, bell-bottom.
Yes, wide whale corduroys, maybe.
Mm. All right, I'm going to go.
Says who?
Have a great rest of the show. What?
You're unbelievable.
What do you want from me?
I was going to. You were supposed to herald some of the participants of the Big Saturday.
I heard Tom say Todd's aging quickly.
We will leave Dave Grenick. We'll save that for Grenick. Let him.
There you go. Dave.
Let him do the herald.
Of information with much more information than I. Why would you cut into his time? Bye.
The one and only, everybody, Andy Serling. So tomorrow, for those of you that won't be able to stream the YouTube audio from. I wonder if they're doing it at one of the. I doubt they're doing it at one of the restaurants. They're probably just doing it. I didn't ask that. I'm assuming that they're just going to do it from the set. I don't know. I'll find out. But either way, we'll pick that up at 11 o'clock tomorrow. Instead, all right. Jay Pribman is going to join us, actually, for a surprise. Jay Pribman is he's turning up early in the week lately, because there's been things to discuss. And Jay jumped into the story from Del Mar after the pick six. And, you know, not that the pick six got hit, especially because it was just... You know, the $114 longest shot on the board winner of Tim McKenna, but the rest of them were, you know, the rest of the winners were very haveable. It was the, you know, the details that came out, you know, pretty quickly about how much was spent against it and the way it was structured. And Jay has continued to follow the story. So we're going to have Jay Pribman join us. And provide, you know, a little bit more detail. And CHRB, to their credit, swung into action yesterday to, you know, to look at the, you know, at the wager and, you know, all the patterns involved and so forth. So, and also we're going to utilize Jay because yesterday I did not get a chance to mention the passing of John Kelly. And, you know, John Kelly, just an institution in the game and on the West Coast, and contributed in so many ways you know, to the sport, and was widely you know, honored, and have Jay tell you more. He knows, you know, obviously way more than I did do. Age of 84. I mean, I've seen Kelly's name for many, many years. Jay Pribman joins us. Jay, good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. And the unusual Tuesday visit following Andy Serling.
Yeah, I mean, I actually kind of feel like, you know, that old W.C. Fields line of, you know, you should never follow children and animals applies here.
God. We're both going to pay for that later, Jay. Jay, you immersed immediately into this story from Sunday and the pick six, and it's really an interesting discussion. There's a lot of tangents to it, and CHRB, they moved quickly yesterday to help people understand what transpired. Take people through it.
Well, so just the triptych of it, on Sunday, Brad Free, we try and have somebody assigned to Del Mar every day, and Sunday, Brad Free was on site. I actually didn't go out for the races that day. I was there in the morning for training, but Brad handled everything in the afternoon, and then yesterday, I was on call to handle anything Del Mar related. So on Sunday, you might remember going into the last leg of the pick six, the horse who won had a will pay that was expressed as the equivalent of four winning tickets. So when the race was over, and then there was a long delay in the payoffs being posted, and then it was posted that there was a single winning ticket, obviously, and rightly so, people were like, what is going on here? And so that was all we knew on Sunday night. And so it seemed incumbent to follow up on it yesterday morning. So I made a few phone calls as soon as people were rubbing the sleep out of their eyes out, on the West Coast, and did what I could at that point on just trying to explain what had transpired, which was that the bet had been made, expressed as an $8 base play. It was part of a computer-assisted wagering program where the person who had or the account that it was linked to had put in nearly $30,000 in wagers, and the bet that won was an $8 base play. So it was four. That's where the four tickets to that horse came out, because there was an $8 base play. But the rules that California has, and this was something that they adopted from some model language that the ARCI put out several years ago, is that if it can be shown that the ticket that won, that had more than one quote-unquote winner on it, is all linked to the same account or ticket, that's considered a single ticket winner for these jackpot purposes. Now, everybody does it differently. Del Mar's is they carve out a smaller portion of their pick six for their jackpot portion of the carryover, as opposed to others that have, the rainbow six type situation with a 20-cent base wager. At Del Mar, it's a $2 pick six. And so when they, when it was, the forensics were done and they could see that this ticket was linked to the same account, as opposed to it being four different accounts, that triggered the payoff not only of winning the pick six, but also the single wager. So that's why the payoff was posted as, having taken down the whole pool, as opposed to there being four winners. So that's kind of how that aspect of it played out. Then there's the larger aspect of this, which is what, where did the bet come from? Why was this played at such an outsized amount? And, it's obvious that this was linked to an account that caters to, very elite, high roller type players. They use computer assisted wagering programs to try and figure out the optimum time of when to dive in. And there's a few aspects of this that I think are interesting in terms of, the amount is obviously a crazy amount of money that was played, but obviously I would imagine, a sweet spot mathematically of when the pool is maybe too small to jump in, where it's not worth your while, but also there's where it gets too large to be able to put in a ticket. But if you can nail something like this in that middle level, you're basically hitting it at a 4 or 5 to 1 play, and you're trying to do enough there to just turn a profit. These are players who I think everybody knows are likely getting rebates. This is part of the business, and it's a very controversial part of the business, especially if you're a small player. But I thought it was important to try and explain in the story, where the ticket came from, as best we could, and what you know, what went down. It's something that Matt Hegarty has written extensively about for us, and I would imagine he'll be doing something again soon, just to remind everybody that, you know, this is out there. And, you know, it's sort of, I think most players know that it's going on, and it's then you decide if you want to be diving into a pool where that's what you're playing against. You know, some people still want to. Others have migrated to other wagers, like, you know, 14% pick five, early pick five play. But the news story, which is what I was tasked to do yesterday, was just the news of it. What was the bet size? How did this? Why was it considered a single ticket? And then, as you mentioned, late in the day, owing to all the interest there was in this, the California Horse Racing Board did a review of the transactions to see how it was placed. And obviously, there's algorithms that this bettor or these types of bettors are playing, because the denominations on this play were made in, you know, some were in the base $2 increments, but some were 4, 6, 8, which is the one that hit, 10, 12, 14, 16, 24, 26, and even up to $60. But because of the way the rules read, if it turns out you're the only one who has it, you know, you are the single ticket winner. So these are, you know, these are very smart, well-funded bettors who have you know, who are really taking an edge that they can take. And, you know, those of us who aren't as well-funded are, you know, need to be aware that this is what, you know, what all is happening in some of these pools. And then you can decide how you want to proceed.
Exactly. And, you know, there's of course, a myriad of issues that have come up over and over again. Whenever there's, you know, the jackpot controversies, you start to, you know, make the pro and con list of you know, what the benefit of these are and what the negatives, and invariably it seems like there's more of an odor and of a you know, just a reaction to, you know, to anything, whether it's DQs or non-DQs, jock, you know, gets dumped during the sequence. I mean, they, over and over again, they just provide, Jay, it seems, an aura of not even illegality, but just of questionable elements that just make everybody crazy. And I've said before, I just don't understand if they're even worth it. I mean, not to mention the money that's kept out of circulation during the jackpot period until there's a force out. If there isn't inadvertent hits, you know, that money could be being used to churn. And it just makes, personally, it makes me nuts. I don't understand the benefit of this concept. And it's not even a big portion of the handle, but it constantly provides negativity out in the, you know, out in the horse playing community.
Yeah, no, I think tracks need to do a cost benefit analysis of the worth of it. I mean, obviously there are some tracks and organizations who believe that, you know, catering to these types of players and providing them with this kind of a wager is beneficial, and there's, you know, it pencils out for them that way. Whether it's penciling out in terms of overall handle, and what's flowing to horsemen, you know, might be a different answer when you factor in, you know, the obvious rebates that these types of players are getting. I mean, it's a whole different level from, you know, the types of wagers that someone like you and I are making. And there's one other thing about the bet yesterday that I wanted to point out, because I think a lot of people were rightly wondering, like, why would somebody play nearly $30,000 in wagers on something like that? Cause, you know, because obviously there's the risk that the payoff could have been a lot less than what they even put in. You know, there's a rebate aspect of this, you know, most likely. And they're just trying to churn. But if they do hit, which they did, don't forget that because of the tax ramifications, you know, everything's taxed based on now on what you bet, not on what the payoff is. So there's no taxes that are taken off on a wager like this, because you're basically hitting a 4 or 5 to 1 shot, as opposed to hitting for $170,000 and then being taxed as though it was a $2 bet and it exceeded the 300-to-1 threshold. So that's another reason someone would, you know, Bigfoot basically a wager like this and come in at that level, because they can play at such a level that they're not even going to be taxed at it. This is a really high level, elite level way of playing.
And you know, for the people who are saying, well, and I brought this up early, Jay. I know you were on assignment, but the fact that the McKenna horse wins and pays $114, you had a 9-to-2 run second. And if that horse wins, you would have had 4 favorites, a second choice, and a third choice. And so if the thing pays under those circumstances, if you run the parlay, and let's say the thing pays, $600-$700, $500, well, that might have been the ticket that they had 30 times. So
right.
There's exponential, people are saying, how could this work? All the past posting suggestions and all the crazy insanity that people were assuming about this, understand that there was a payoff here that might have been 12 times, 13 times, or 30 times, and figure out what that would have meant. And it somewhat justifies the $29,000 spent. I talked to as high-level a player this morning as there is around the sport who understands this very well. And even he said this was a really exorbitant amount. He said it's higher than, even these kinds of operations. That's the one element. And he said there's nothing about this, those increments, that is unusual. It's almost like a ladder style. But he said it really was a big number to spend against this. So other than that, this was done on the up and up and under the rules and under some of the, some of the conditions at which the game right now is being run.
Right. I mean, this is what is going on in these types of wagers, and I think it's important to remind everybody of that, and then you can go forward as a player with that knowledge,
right,
and decide how you want to proceed with that knowledge. You know, it's something, like I said, we've written about it numerous times over the years. I think sometimes there's short-term memory as to this that it's going on, and then occasionally something like this happens to remind everybody anew. And it's time, since it's happened twice in California in the last week and a half. It happened at Pleasanton as well recently. That was on a 20-cent base wager that was hit a couple of times.
Right.
Maybe it's time for another big picture story on this phenomenon.
Well, we will wait for Matt Hegarty to swing into action on that front. Jay, while we've got you, and we'll talk about things end of the week when we meet, ahead of the weekend, and we'll talk more racing topics, including maximum security and midcourt and more. But can you pay tribute to John Kelly? I saw of his passing over the weekend, and I just saw the huge outpouring, particularly from West Coast stakeholders.
Yeah, no, John was a really well-respected, well-liked, I would call him a quiet giant in the game, because his influence was quite wide, but he was not a demonstrative person, and I think that's why or at least publicly demonstrative, and I think that's why maybe people back east didn't know him as well. But he was on the Del Mar board of directors for 12 years, been a member of the Jockey Club, owned a number of top horses, probably the best known in California being Borrego, who won the Pacific Classic back in 2005. But he had a number of top horses, and, you know, including several that raced out here that Christophe Clement shipped out here. And he lived not far from Del Mar, just inland in Rancho Santa Fe. He had a beautiful piece of property there called Tres Palomas, where he lived. And so he was a regular out at Del Mar. He started his business career in Northern California, in Sacramento, and had TV stations up there, and founded a bank, and was very involved in broadcasting. He was a very generous person. I'll tell you just sort of one story. A couple of years ago, he raced horses in Australia, and he was going to be going to Australia after the fall meeting at Del Mar, right around New Year's was when it was going to, the trip was going to take place. And he invited a number of people, including some executives at Del Mar, to go along. And, I mean, he picked up everything. Just said, you know, we're going down there. I want to treat you guys to, you know, a real racing-related vacation. And they flew down to Australia and went all around there. And he just did stuff like that. Was out at Del Mar quite, very, very often. He was, you know, was ill lately and went downhill pretty quickly in the last few weeks. But I know some people who had, you know, been to dinner with him just a few weeks ago, and then he knew, you know, what his fate was then, and was, I'm told, very, you know, at peace with it. Said he had had a good life, and you know, was ready. But you know, just a really smart, kind, generous person was John Kelly.
I just know for as long as I've been a player, essentially, I would see the names John and Sarah Kelly. I mean, just on the ownership line for years. You mentioned Borrego, Sporting Art was a nice horse that theirs, Vacare as well, and Red Vine and. Some of his charities too, the Big Brothers and the Boy Scouts, and those that wish to donate in his memory, center at Equine Health at Cal Davis, and also the Gregson Foundation. And certainly, you know, it's funny, Jay, I started the show this morning with TRF and Kim Weir, and I talked about how difficult a summer it is for the Del Mar and Saratoga charity and foundations, and we can kind of bookend the day with the Gregson Foundation and how much they rely on the social side of Del Mar. So a Gregson Foundation gift in John's memory might be in order.
That's where my money for in honor of John went. I mean, I'm a huge supporter of that organization. I really believe in what they do in terms of supporting the backside and supporting the, you know, not only the workers who are back there now, and it's really come in to focus this year with the pandemic and getting, you know, food and donations to the backside workers at Santa Anita now at Del Mar and with vouchers and things of that nature, but also their long-term overriding goal is sending the children of backside workers to educational opportunities in college, and just the list of people who have been able to take advantage of that and the success that they've gone on to is just really inspiring. And it's, you know, if you've got 10 extra minutes to spare today, I would just encourage people to go to the Gregson Foundation website and read up on them. It really is a worthwhile charity. It's racing people giving back to racing people. It's named for one of my all-time favorite people who I have ever come across in this sport, the late trainer Eddie Gregson. So I couldn't endorse that charity any stronger.
We'll put the link up today for the Gregson Foundation. Perfect balance, East Coast, West Coast, TRF, and the Gregson Foundation, the two most closely associated charities during the Saratoga and Del Mar seasons. Jay, I appreciate the quick response to this Del Mar Pick 6 story, and we'll look forward to talking to you Friday.
Very good. Thanks, Steve.
Jay Privman, everybody, DRF Privman, taking care of the Derby Watch, taking care of spot news, and tracking the big horses like the handicap division, and we'll talk about that with Jay on Friday. We'll send you out toward the race day. Just seconds remain. Let me thank Kim Weir and Jay, Andy Serling, and Dr. Ducharme. Really enjoyed that, and that went about twice as long as I had promised him. I hope I wasn't keeping him from something, but it was terrific. The racing today and Colonial, of course, opening day. Congratulations to Jill Byrne and the whole staff down there. Wish them the best of luck. Safe, successful meet. For the horsemen as well. Today, from the bottom up, how about Thistledown, Presque Isle, Parks, Mountaineer, Louisiana Downs, Lone Star, Indiana, Hastings, Fort Erie. Dr. Blarney, right? Won that rescheduled mass stake at Fort Erie yesterday. Finger Lakes, Fairmount, Colonial again, Canterbury, Belterra, Assiniboia, Arapahoe. Plenty of Tuesday racing action for you. Back with you tomorrow. We'll have Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillendale. We're going to actually talk some violence and his absolute tear that he's on, and more with Sid and Seth. And we might I think I might go over it. I think we're going to have a nice day. It's supposed to be hot, but looks like a nice day set for week three. Whitney Week at Saratoga. Good luck today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
Let the summertime song fall on the apple. Lord, there goes a Buick 49, like sheep with the angels riding, riding down the line. We think there is a soul.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice
invoices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.